for what you're here for.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Going on, Toronto. Happy Halloween. You're listening to Radio Basics on CHRY 105.5 FM. You know, I was thinking of what the most appropriate message was for the people tonight here on Halloween in the era of popular uprisings all around the world. I thought that, you know, maybe the most appropriate message was 1%, we will haunt you all your days till your grave. People are coming at you. Every day of the year, not just Halloween. You're listening to Radio Basics on CHRY 105.5 FM. We're the radio wing of Basics Community News Service. You may see us on your doorstep, on the stoop, under your door. Basics Community Newsletter coming at you for free. If you like what you see, hit us up at basics.canada@gmail.com. You can not only get that free newspaper delivered to you, but help us out, right? It gets to your door through free, you know, community distribution that we're trying to provide all across the city to working class people in order to advance the struggles of people here in this city against capitalism, against oppression, and for liberation. On the show tonight, we're going to be talking with Nate Buckley from the National Confederation to Free All Political Prisoners and End Unjust Incarceration. That's a new confederation in the U.S. that is come up to address the issues of the prison industrial complex, political prisoners, and the general issues of repression and oppression in the prison system in the United States, which has sparked off this year, a number of historically unprecedented hunger strikes coming out of Pelican Bay in California. Later in the show, we're also going to be talking to Debbie Young and East Africa. I don't know if Toronto can claim her for ourselves, but she's a world-renowned dub poet, monodramatist, artist, educator. Many may know her from her 2001 role in The Kink in My Hair, also for many of her LPs and EPs. And she's got a new album coming out, 333, and as well, she's staging right now the Sankofa Trilogy here in Toronto. We're going to be talking with her later in the show, but before that, headline news. In international news, Syria. As NATO made its official announcement today that its mission in Libya is officially over, leaving an estimated 60,000 civilians dead from the combined effect of NATO's airstrikes and the massacres committed by the Western-backed National Transitional Council, now the Western imperialists are moving on to Syria. Both the United States and Turkey have been accused of arming forces loyal to Western interventionism via the Turkish military through Syria's shared border with Turkey. Western corporate media today conveniently narrowed their attention onto the Syrian National Council's call for a no-fly zone to be imposed on Syria, a critical step also on the road to war against Libya, endowing NATO with the stamp of approval of the United Nations. This past weekend, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad told a Russian television station in an exclusive interview that the West will regret waging a war in Syria as it will lead to many, many more Afghanistans. Today, the United Nations General Secretary Ban Ki-moon played his part for the West by stepping up criticism of the al-Assad regime. Hypocritically, this while U.S. officials cracked down on Occupy protesters throughout the country and at anti-austerity protests in Europe continued to produce running street battles with the police forces in European countries. And now on to Somalia. Yesterday, the Kenyan military conducted air raids on a refugee camp in the town of Jilib in southern Somalia that was packed with women and children. According to Doctors Without Borders, at least 5 civilians were killed and 45 were left injured, 31 of whom were children. Kenyan forces invaded Somalia on October 16th under the pretext of fighting terrorism of the resistance group Al-Shabaab. While the Obama administration has denied supporting the Kenyan invasion, Kenya's military received the logistical support of aerial attacks by American drones on rebel-held areas in Somalia. Reports have also emerged that French naval forces have also joined in on the foreign aggressions against the Somali people, contributing its own campaign in the town of Kuday last weekend. Somalia has been occupied, bombed, attacked, and divided by foreign powers for more than 2 decades now, with the most brutal of the recent foreign aggressions headed up by the Ethiopian military's occupation from December 2006 until January 2009. It is widely known that the Ethiopian forces entered Somalia with the backing and approval of the United States under the George Bush administration, looting, torturing, raping, and conquering the country and killing more than 10,000 civilians. The Ethiopian military occupation was replaced by an 8,000-troop-strong Ugandan and Burundian armed force under the auspices of the African Union, two countries who are also known to be backed by U.S. imperialism. The last 5 years of military occupations and aggressions have been aimed at crushing the Al-Shabaab armed movement, which was formerly the armed wing of the Islamic Courts Union, until the former broke off and the latter joined the American-sponsored transitional federal government. In March 2010, Canada added Al-Shabaab to the list of designated terrorist organizations, an entirely hypocritical move considering Canada's own war crimes in Somalia in 1993, when evidence emerged of a Canadian military lynching of a Somali teenager, Shidani Arone. You know, I'm not too... I can't say that I agree with the political objectives of Al-Shabaab, it being an organization... organized along religious lines, but no more than I can agree with the political objectives of much of the Occupy movement, which tends not to be politically united, to have little ideological or political direction, and not too many answers in terms of where things are to go. But to be frank, I actually know very little about Al-Shabaab, so I can have to refrain from any extended commentary on that organization's direction. What I will say, however, is that the people have a right to resist, right? Al-Shabaab is fully within their rights, even according to international law, to resist and to repel foreign occupiers that have repeatedly breached international law, invading the country, committing untold crimes and massacres against the Somali people. You know, we live in Toronto, sisters and brothers, where our Somali sisters and brethren have come to this country not merely looking for better opportunities, but because they were forced out of their own country by endless civil war, continuously stoked and provoked and imposed by foreign powers. I can't name the number of Somalis I've met and known who have told me that they would love to return to Somalia as soon as that country is free from foreign occupations and aggressions and when things are safe to go back again. So, until that day, all power to the people in resistance against the imperialists, U.S. and France, and their local proxies and puppets in Kenya, Ethiopia, and Uganda. And, you know, long live all the people contributing to the struggle for their own freedom. And on that track, I'm just going to drop this. On that note, I'm going to drop this new joint from Immortal Tech off. It's the title track off his new album, Martyr. Check it out. Radio Basics will be right back with our interview talking about the prison industrial complex in the United States with Nate Buckley, and stay tuned for later in the show as well. We're going to be talking to Debbie Young.
A man who walks with God can walk anywhere. Hence, I fear nothing. The point of guerrilla war is not to succeed. It's always been just to make the enemy bleed. Depriving the soldiers of the peace of mind that they need. Bullets are hard to telegraph when they bob and they weave. The only way a guerrilla war can ever be over is when the occupation can't afford more soldiers until they have to draft the last of you into the service. And you refuse because you don't see the purpose. The only way to counter the insurgents that are well equipped is to paint the people fighting for freedom as terrorists. Then find a faction looking for fraud.
enforcement. Install them in power and murder any objections. You can't stop a revolution for reason. So to beat them, they offer people the illusion of freedom. But when you're done dreaming and wake up tortured for treason, then you can see them hiding behind the guard they believe in. Deep in the trenches in the heart of a war. That's the place the martyr is born. During the night before the start of the dawn. That's the place the martyr is born. Gunshots are raining in the heart of a storm. That's the place the martyr is born. Guerrilla war when the army is gone. That's the place the martyr is born. The purpose of life is a life with a purpose. So I'd rather die for a cause than live a life that is worthless. I don't need the circus or the day of national observance. I need you to think for you and stop being a servant. Pawns only move a square in the game that they're used in, and realize it too late, like the shooting of Huey Newton or Patrice Lumumba and Salvador Allende. Slaughtered by the power hungry branches of their own head. Gandhi wasn't killed by Pakistani nationals. He was assassinated by a Hindu radical, and Che Guevara rebel to a U.S. continent was sold to the CIA by Bolivian communists. Wasn't Yitzhak Rabin murdered by a Zionist, and Anwar Sadat a victim of the same violence? Malcolm X was seen as a threat to the FBI, but to blast them they used Muslims from the NOI. Even the 35th president of the republic was murdered by factions of his own government. So now that it's proven that a soldier of revolution or head of an empire disguised in the constitution cannot escape the retribution or manipulation of the self-appointed rulers of the planet's corporations. So I'ma need every generation to put your hands up, cause you can only get them off your back when you stand up. Deep in the trenches in the heart of a war, that's the place the martyr is born. During the night before the start of the dawn, that's the place the martyr is born. Gunshots are raining in the heart of a storm, that's the place the martyr is born. Guerrilla war when the army is gone. That's the place the martyr is born. Mother Bell, I'm gone.
I was men blessed by God to survive some of the worst circumstances. I had many things. Beautiful woman I loved. Home, money. And I gave it all up. To bleed and to die free. Sometimes I look back on that life and I wonder what it would have been like. And in moments of weakness I think about training. But then I snap the fuck out of it and I get back to my reality. And I realize that I'm in the heart of a war. And that's the place a martyr is born.
CHRY is one of the only radio stations where you can hear engaging, quality, alternative radio you won't hear anywhere else. We receive financial support from advertising, your donations, and a levy from York University students. This revenue goes toward our operating costs. It lets us spin tracks from local, emerging artists and provides a space for alternative viewpoints you can't hear on commercial radio stations. CHRY believes in maintaining its integrity by upholding our mandate, complying with regulatory agencies such as the CRTC, and by using professional business practices. We don't sell our program time. Neither advertisers nor donors dictate the content of programs on CHRY, and donations don't qualify clients for free ads or plugs. The best way to get your product or service mentioned on air is by purchasing an affordable commercial package. CHRY is your community radio station. Keep it free. Keep it genuine. Learn about our standards and advertising at chry.fm.
Your community radio,
CHRY
105.5. Them come with a Bible and a gun. Them come with the shackles and the rum. God save the queen. God will save you too if you're down on your knees. For 500 years, blood, sweat, and the tears. Convert the Africans. Brainwash the Africans. His eye is on the sparrow. Misogynist, a missionary worker. What an
insanity. In the name of Christianity, mother country want to boost our economy. So now what? You are a colony existing to feed white supremacy. Slave labor are Indian indenture. While you go on the scrape to a Eurocentrifuge, stolen from Ethiopia, ripped from the womb of Mama Africa. My people, do you remember? Member, 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 member. Rise up, my people, rise up. Time to break these chains, 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 chains. Christianity was used to end slavery. Time that we are free, for free, for free. I say rise up, my people, rise up. Time to break these chains, 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 chains. Too long we have been living in captivity. Time that we are free, for 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 free.
That was the one and only Debbie Young. She's going to be on the show with us later today. That was Bible and Gun offering new and upcoming album 333. She's going to be talking to us about that and her Sankofa trilogy, which is being staged right now. Now for our feature interview and discussion for the day, we're going to be talking about political prisoners, repression, political repression in America's prison system and the prison industrial complex that is America's prison system, that are veritably concentration camps. On the line with us today is Nate Buckley, an organizer with the National Confederation to Free All Political Prisoners and End Unjust Incarceration. And he's going to be talking to us specifically about the case of one brother, Robert Seth Hayes, one of America's most longtime running political prisoners, who's been in jail since 1973, if I'm not mistaken, a former member of the Black Liberation Army and the Black Panther Party. Nate Buckley is an organizer with the National Confederation. He's on the line with us. Thanks for being on the line, Nate.
Oh, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, much appreciated for coming through, man. So I was thinking we can start off by telling our listeners a little bit about Robert Seth Hayes. Who is he? How did he end up in jail? How do we qualify him as a political prisoner? What is his case?
Well, I guess a brief history of Seth is Seth was born in the Bronx and grew up in New York City. He was drafted into the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
He served a term over in Vietnam, and when on his arrival back home, after the civil rights movement was really heated up and Martin Luther King was shot, and so there were riots out in a lot of the different cities around that issue, and he was told to march on, you know, his own community with a bayonet on his gun, and that's the type of treatment you don't treat citizens in your own country or people that you care about. And so that was like an eye-opener for him, and that basically, he said after that, that was the saddest day of his life, and from mm-hmm. that moment on, he could never, you know, relate to the American whole lifestyle. And from there on, when he got out of the military, he joined the Black Panther Party, and from then he joined the Black Liberation Army after the COINTELPRO basically dismantled and inner fighting and, you know.
Yeah, that was the FBI counterintelligence program that was, you know, fiercely repressive of the Black Panther Party in particular, but basically all revolutionary organizations in that period, especially those of the colonized and oppressed people in the United States, like the Puerto Ricans, the African Americans, so on and so forth.
Yeah, counterintelligence program. So, mm-hmm. which basically forced him underground, and at which point he was convicted, I think in 1971. Of murder of a transit officer, and he's been in jail ever since then, and he's been in jail now for close coming on four decades,
mm-hmm.
and he's over 60. He was just recently married. He's been to 8 parole boards, and each one he's been denied for serious nature of crime.
Yeah.
Now, serious nature of crime is something that should be dealt with in the first 25 years. That's you know, based on the original crime. To life is based upon what you do in there. And he's on honor block. He's got a great work history. You know, he's got a wife, he's got kids, he's got grandkids. He has support on the outside. He's an exemplary prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
He has a great work record. He couldn't do much more. He's been going to college, and he's not. So as far as that's concerned, he can't change the serious nature of his crime. And so they just keep hitting him. So that's basically like an indefinite life sentence.
Yeah, which is being imposed on him for political reasons because of his past or present political convictions.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is there anything surrounding his case? I know that this was a time of fierce repression of people who were trying to organize for change. You know, in the wake of the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, a lot of young revolutionaries were more and more recognizing that they were going to have to confront the armed terror of the state in order to be able to actually make some change. And in the process, there were gun battles between police officers and some of these young revolutionaries. But in many cases as well, there was a lot of frame-ups because it was just so easy to frame many of these young revolutionaries for killing police officers. Is there anything regarding the circumstances of his particular case that merits reconsideration, or is it that he served his time and it's time to get out?
Yeah, well, I mean, just in general, he had just got back from Vietnam,
yeah.
In which he was, he's right. He just got back from Vietnam when he had joined the Black Panther Party, and basically what was said then was, occupying troops of a foreign army view like the community he was from, the African community, In the Bronx, and they treat them the same way. So, and if you get into like the COINTELPRO, what they did to like with frame ups from they framed up so many different Black Panther Party members, and they killed people just outright, and they also instigated warfare between different the United Slaves. And that was over in California.
Which led to the death of Bunchy Carter and John Huggins, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, Fred Hampton Jr., Fred Hampton, and, Geronimo Pratt was framed up in California.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just briefly touching on a lot of different really horrendous things that happened. But, they would send letters from different members of the party and saying that they were different people. And then they would say, you better get out of here because this so-and-so is coming after you. And then they would send a letter to the other guys like, so-and-so left town because he stole all this kind of money. And then so they set up problems, they put people in jail, and they were just outright brutally murdering. The Black Panther Party was J. Edgar Hoover, who was at the front of the counterintelligence program. He called the Black Panther Party the number one domestic terrorist, not the terrorist, but threat to national security.
Uh-huh.
So, he wanted to neutralize that.
Indeed. And if by national security they meant, U.S. imperialism,
yeah.
Their interest, or in the political parlance of today, the interest of the 1%,
yeah.
For certain, yeah, he was a threat to national, the party was a threat to national interest,
yeah.
Of course.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
And that's, that was their, they were trying to bring justice on the unjust system. And and of course, no one was ever convicted or tried for anything that the counterintelligence program did with the FBI. So people had to take their own problems into their own hands. And I guess I could read you a quote from Seth after he got in. He said, "I am a soldier. Yes, a soldier in the Black Liberation Army. A soldier is more than a fighter." You asked, "Do you regret your actions during your time you were free?" "No, I do not regret my actions of serving my family, my neighborhood, or my nation. By becoming a soldier, fighting for them, I believe in people. That is good and decent people.
Mm-hmm.
I dislike people who trouble, oppress, and injure other people. My job as a soldier of the BLA is to fight to save decent people of every color. I love people, so I love my duty, and I have strength to carry out my duties."
Mm-hmm.
So that was a long time ago, but basically, he fought for his people. He fought for freedom, for all people and struggling people. The BLA. Is an anti-racist, anti-sexist, anti-capitalist organization that that struggles for freedom. They had three things, their principles, is they, we are anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, anti-racist, anti-sexist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we interviewed Robert Seth Hayes back in, I believe it was 2000, I think it was August, September 2008. Okay. We went down to Wendy Correctional Facility just outside of Buffalo, and we talked to him. And, you know, one thing that we asked him was, what is the legacy of the Black Panther Party today? Yeah. How does it live on? And you know, the fact that organization existed, and, you know, like, who its leading figures were, what its ideology was, it's the media has done everything possible to distort the character of that organization. And that is when they are giving attention to it, which most of the time they just ignore its incredible significance in the history of, you know, radical social change in the United States. We hear about civil rights leaders who were marginal in comparison to the effect of the Black Panther Party. And he answered that question. Before the Black Panther Party, there was no such thing as a black politician. Why? Because before the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army, there was no strong force in the black community upon which black opportunists could refer back to in their own compromising with the system. So all black politicians, Obama included, can thank the BPP for paving the way for the small events in the black community. And I'm struck by this quote, reading it like 3 years later, because this is before, I guess this is just before the election of Obama. And here we are 3 years later, we've now seen some of the largest prison uprisings in American history have occurred under Obama. Not to suggest that Obama put the system into place, he has continued it. And I know that you're an organizer with the National Confederation to Free All Political Prisoners and End Unjust Incarceration. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about, you know, how Seth Hayes' situation fits into the broader context of, you know, political repression in the prison system and the broader prison industrial complex.
Well, in Seth's case, Seth is one of the many political prisoners here in America. And what the Confederation is trying to do is basically bringing some building blocks because to build a movement to free all political prisoners and unjust incarcerations, because what has been happening is there's been a lot of movement and work around these issues, but it's been disunified, unstructured, and then fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
So back in August, we got together and we formed the National Confederation with various groups and individuals, and, you know, we're getting together in a structured, unified way to amplify each other's, share resources and enhance each other's work, to build on stuff against, like, death penalty, mass incarceration, control units, abolition programs, and all sort of stuff like this. And, you know, because at this point, you know, there's, like, we have the Move 9, Mumia Abu-Jamal. There's six political, David Gilbert, Robert Seth Hayes, Jaleel Muntah King. I mean, the list goes on. And there's a lot of those are the older, and there's new generation of Earth Liberation prisoners, Animal Liberation prisoners. There's Puerto Rican independence prisoners.
Yeah.
There's a whole new wave of Muslim prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we really need some unification on this. And also, as far as the prison industrial complex is concerned, you know, America is 5% of the world population and holds 25% of the world's prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And we in America, at a rate 5.8 times that of South Africa apartheid in 1993, black males are imprisoned in America. So the racism is this off the charts here in America, the land of the free, and
mm-hmm.
it's a tool of repression, because it was mostly implemented after, you know, the upheaval in the 60s and the 70s, basically putting, there's 1% of America's people are in prison, and a lot of that's in the minority, and, you know, like you said, third world people in America, and that's to make sure that there's not a strong mass of people who are dedicated for social change. So you take people off the street, people who would normally be out here possibly to contribute to their community, to bring some self-determination, and now you put them in jail, you demonize them, and you break up families.
Mm-hmm.
Break up the home structure, and you dismantle a community of of any possibility mm-hmm. of, you know, building, and that's not true because it's going to happen, but it just, it's a big stumbling block, and that's what the Confederation is out, to unite people who are working to free political prisoners with people who are working in reform prisons and people who are working for abolition and everybody, you know, who work around these issues to, you know, really come together, put yeah. down their events. And
I've often thought of you know, the existence of these, what I have no qualms against calling concentration camps, because you have 1/4 of the world's prisoners in one country that only, like you say, only counts for 5% of the world's population. Yeah. It's like one of the perverse side effects or consequences of being the world imperialist superpower is that the intolerance towards any genuine political dissent at home, towards any form of instability, social instability, is policed and criminalized to such a degree that you end up with 25% of the world's prisoners. Yeah. Because the American, you know, the imperialist superpower cannot tolerate that kind of political upheaval in, you know, within its own borders. Mind you, this is, of course, as you mentioned, the most oppressed people, the colonized peoples, the native Puerto Rican, you know, African American or new African peoples.
Yeah.
So who has come together under the banner of this confederation? Like, what kind of networks and organizations have been brought together under this new banner?
Jericho Movement to Free All Political Prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
The Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. Many different individuals and people working in other organizations. See, right now it's just forming. We haven't, I'm on the interim steering committee, mm-hmm. which is from August to December. We're setting up elections. We're getting the structure kind of worked out within the organization so that we can begin to build on a national level.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, we haven't had elections for the actual steering committee. We're just, okay. you know, the MOVE organization is part of it.
MOVE, all right.
Yeah, from Philadelphia. And they have 9 of their family members in jail.
Yeah.
And also including Mumi Abu-Jamal.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are involved, and it's right now we're kind of building it, the structure, so that it can become a life of its own.
Mm-hmm. So I understand that there are some new developments, you know, in Seth's case, new possibilities of being released on parole. Can you tell us a bit more about that situation?
He has a new lawyer, a newer lawyer, who specializes in parole, which is helpful. And she's been going and bringing up issues, appealing the parole denials. And when usually what they do is it takes about every 2 years you have a new parole date. And so if you file for appeal, it comes back about a month before your next parole date for you to do a filing. So it's really no point of mm-hmm. even doing it. But there's a stipulation in which if you get the original trial lawyer to write a letter to the parole board stating that they didn't contact them, because it's their responsibility to contact the original trial lawyer when the defendant is up for parole for the first time, and they didn't do that. So she found him in California. He wrote a letter. He's actually in a nursing home, wrote a letter, and now saying that he never received a letter from the parole board on that stipulation, got a reversal in Seth's latest parole denial. So he's up for the parole board again tomorrow, and it's not a reversal, so it's not like granted he gets out,
yeah,
but
yeah.
He gets a second chance. And, you know, and also she brought up issues of, like, you can't use political affiliation, you can't bring up the serious nature of crime, because that's past, you know. And they didn't respond to those issues, but it doesn't mean that
yeah.
you know, they haven't taken a look, because there's been a lot of serious work going into that. So
yeah.
it's a, you know, there's a possibility of him receiving, and, you know, this is not just... It's especially worse for political prisoners, but it's a statewide issue in New York and in the country that they just don't allow prisoners to get out. I just one quick example.
Yeah.
David Gilbert's partner, when she, I'm forgetting her name at this point, but she came up to the parole board, and she had specific inner 20 to life, and she got at the parole board when she was being sentenced. She does everything that she's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
She can get out. Like, granted, she doesn't have any tickets while she's there. She did everything she was supposed to. So it was stipulated in her sentencing. So the parole board let her out, and the next day, after they let her out, which was completely legal, what they were supposed to, the whole parole board got fired. Pataki fired the entire parole board who let her out, just doing their job. So it's a real rough climate for people to get out.
So regardless of the rules and the regulations, we have a political and like the executive and the bureaucracy is very, you know, politically astute when it comes to letting out people who hold political convictions that are oppositional to them.
Yep, exactly.
So that's what's up. Yeah. Well, we're going to keep our eye on the case of Robert Seth Hayes, obviously wishing, you know, him the best and hope that he gets out. We understand that he's also been pretty sick as of late, well, for a while, but his situation has not been improving.
Yeah, it's a wonder. Which, just talked with his wife. His wife could not, Sheila could not make it on the show tonight.
Yeah.
But, you know, he has a really bad case of diabetes, and he gets in these comas, you know, diabetic shock. And he had 6 episodes of that in December, and he's been transferred since then to another facility in which he had no recent history of it. In the past about 6 months, he's been fine. And then now, leading up the 1 week before, he has this new parole date. He has just had 2 comas, which is like very close to death. And you know, it begs the question to say why. You know, the medication's wrong again, and you know his levels go up and they change his medication. It goes up and down, and you can't get any good food in there at all.
No, whatsoever. I remember talking to him 3 years ago. You know, at Wendy Correctional Facility, and he was telling us, and it really. I mean, it's just one of those little things that just wrenches your heart. You know, he was telling us how he hadn't eaten a fresh piece of fruit or vegetable in decades. That all they feed them in there is this, you know, to the extent that they get any fruit, it's this canned garbage just soaked in syrup, which for a man of like himself, I mind you, he was incredibly physically fit. You know, he was on point mentally, you know, very mentally alert. So I'm sure he's doing to the best of his ability, he's trying to keep healthy, but you're being fed garbage. You're being fed syrup, corn syrup. You know, like
the one diabetic thing they have on the commissary is sugar-free candy, and that's their option for diabetics. So it's
so what? Like instead, you're pumping yourself full of like aspartame.
Yeah, exactly.
Give you cancer instead of diabetes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
pick your poison.
Man, it's crazy. So yeah, obviously we're gonna keep our eye on Robert Seth Hayes, and of course, Basics is going to be down in Buffalo meeting up with you in a couple of weeks. I understand you guys got a community event you're putting together.
Yeah, John Gaskins, Mac, and Kate Piper are coming up from Washington to talk about Defying the Tomb, which is, I'm sure you've talked about it.
Definitely. Like, and we actually had Mac, John Gaskins, on the show a few weeks ago. We podcasted that show, and we were talking about some of the torture that was going on in the prison that he was at with Kevin Rasheed Johnson at Red Onion State in Virginia.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, they're coming down to it. We opened a new bookstore here in Buffalo called Burning Books.
Mm-hmm.
You can online, burningbooksbuffalo.com. If you have a mailing list, we have these kind of events all the time. Support political prisoners. And, you know, we had a solidarity with the California prison hunger strike, which had over 12,000 prisoners striking for 5 core demands, which were very not like... They were not outrageous demands. They were very, like...
Quite modest, you know? Yeah, like, civil rights, modest. Basic, very basic civil rights demands.
You just treat people like people, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You know? So, and brother, I'm going to have to leave it there. I got a break to a commercial.
Let me just... Kathy Bodine was a woman who was made the parole board, who did 20 times. And just another quick, real quick point, but, you know, political prisoners aren't people who... Like, Seth didn't wake up one day and just say, oh, you know, I want to join the Black Liberation Army. You know, it's through just constant struggle that these kind of things happen. You know, an Earth Liberation prisoner, they might have, like, written letters you know, went to protests, and the earth was still being destroyed. The black community was still being killed. Anti-imperialist, you know, napalm was dropping in Vietnam. The Muslim community, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan just being blown apart. You know, it's like it's a life-death situation where people try their best to, like, go about the normal channels of change that they tell you that are allowed.
Definitely.
And it just doesn't work. So these are sincere, loving, caring individuals with the kind of hearts and the spirit that you just can't imagine how amazing and even intact it is after years in prison. And it's not because they, you know, are some, like, you know, psychopathic, whatever. It's the absolute opposite. Their humanity is so intact and so strong, they just will, it's not, they don't see, they, it's not the kind of love they're going to allow in the world to let all this madness just go about destroying the earth, destroying communities, and destroying people and things that are dear to life. And, you know, they're out there to protect it, and so we need to be out there.
Definitely.
To protect
these
them.
These are our modern heroes. These are true, yeah, true freedom fighters.
Yeah. And thank you so much for having me on, and yeah.
Yeah, Nate Buckley, man. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah,
we'll see you soon. All right, brother.
All right, bye-bye.
That was Nate Buckley of the National Confederation to Free All Political Prisoners. You're listening to Radio Basics on CHOY 105.5 FM. Coming up next, we got Debbie Young on the show.
Why my friend, my friend, my friend, a revolution come to an end, an end, an end. Why am I friend, my friend, my friend, a revolution come to an end, an end, an end. And so tonight I will curl up in front of the tube and watch Ally McBeal, Seinfeld and Friends so that I can be a part of the society. My priority to spread new Nike. Cause my friend, a revolution, revolution, revolution has come to an end, my friend. Has come to an end, my friend. Wait, what kind of helpless, hopeless state them have we, the people, in a saying we have no power to affect change, but that we do have the dollar, dollar. We buy Coca-Cola, McDonald's, Pepsi, Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Ralph Lauren, Nautica, and DKN. Why do they try to distract we from the gutsy reality of living in a disaster society? We want to know who is truly financially back in this year. Capitalism, brothers and sisters, are feeling naked without our tables of labels. Without our tables of labels, of labels, of labels. Why, my friend, my friend, my friend, a revolution come to an end, an end, an end. Why, my friend, my friend, my friend, a revolution come to an end, an end, an end. But oh, revolution for done. When you walk around downtown, don't you see the urban slum? Beside the Soho, a slow-mo, beg some change and passes by, pass in by. Keep your eyes straight ahead. And ho, 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 revolution for done. When beside the eating center, a sex trade worker is a woman of color. She's a single mother, she's just on the corner. She's just begging a dollar. She's just trying, 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 trying to make a living. And how revolution for done. When in a disaster state, we drop a rate way too high for mention. And under tension, we buck our heads. The commercial gangster, bop, 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 bop. Kill each other off, Lord, Lord, have mercy. Kill each other off, Lord, Lord, have mercy. Kill each other off, Lord, Lord, have mercy. My friend, my friend, my friend. Revolution has come to an end, an end. Lord, my friend, my friend, my friend. Revolution has come to an end, an end. And so tonight I will call up in front the tube and watch the bold and the beautiful. And the young and the restless. But I am young and restless, yes. I am young and restless, yes. I am young and restless. Revolution can't done not yet. Revolution can't done not yet. Oh, what were mothers and fathers committed to a struggle? Them never life done. Them never curl up. Them never get too comfortable anywhere. Asasta Shakur, Amilcar Cabral, Franz Fanon, Steve Pico, Stokely Carmichael, Angela Davis. This list is long and long. This list goes on and on. Watch them, feel them, breathe them, be them. They are my revolutionary friends. My revolutionary friends. Revolution.
cause you and you and you and you and you and me too. Feel it beating, bleeding, boiling, blood pumping, blood, blood pumping. In our with beings, we the people.
What a fierce track. You know, I wanted to bring the volume down to bring on Debbie Young a little sooner, but I just couldn't fade out that track. I wanted our people to hear every last word. That was Debbie Young, Anita Africa, African Jamaican Canadian dub poet, monodramatist, and educator who has done much of her work out of Toronto, but who also calls France, Cuba, the UK, and South Africa her homes. Known to many of us here in Toronto as Debbie, you may remember her from her 2001 role as Stacey Ann, a young girl who survived incest in the play The Kink in My Hair. While being a mother of two, Moon and Phoenix, she's finding the time to tour the world, touching down on India, the UK, South Africa, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, the Caribbean, Zimbabwe, and other parts of Southern Africa. She just returned, actually, from South Africa. She's in Toronto now, and Debbie is on the line with me tonight. How you doing, sister?
Big up. Thank you for the invitation,
no,
my love.
I'm so honored.
That
track was so alive. You know, we were actually talking about political prisoners tonight. We were actually just talking about the case of Robert Seth Hayes. Hearing you shout outs to all the revolutionary fallen heroes and sheroes, man. That was tough.
I remember them because we stand on their shoulders, you know. If them must set a precedence for us and clear a certain way for us, there's no way that someone like me could be here being able to chant these lyrics and being able to do the work that I do. So enough big up and respect to all of the elders who've gone before and those who continue to mentor us.
Where would we be today without these figures? You know, tell us, I'm always astonished by your music, by your productions. It's just, it's more than just like, it's live.
It's growing and I'm learning as we go along. I'm learning better how to say what I need to say, and I'm learning how to better implicate myself in the process of saying what I need to say, and I'm learning how to better take responsibility for the changes that I envision in myself and in the world. And it's all a learning process, man, like one step at a time.
Definitely. Let me talk about your, I hope you don't mind, just a little bit about your personal life, which you clearly have no problem showing to the world.
Your two beautiful sons.
No doubt, your beautiful sons. You know, I'm actually, my wife and my comrade is bringing a child into the world, inshallah, very soon. Thank you. And I want to know how you do it. How are you touring the world right now with these two beautiful young boys you have?
I mean, it's definitely a challenge. Let's start there. You know, having children is a challenge for sure. And I think what I'm learning as I go along is there is no need to do it by oneself, you know, to martyr oneself. And so the fortunate thing for Moon and Phoenix is that they have an extended community that really loves them, that cares for them, and that helps me to raise them so that I'm not doing it alone. Mm-hmm. And it means setting up communities in all the different countries that we go to. In different places, childcare becomes more complicated. Like, I find that being in Toronto and being in the kind of structures that we have in Toronto,
it's most complicated in Toronto. Like,
sometimes it can be more challenging to have childcare taken care of, especially since those systems are set up for you when you're living ongoing in one place, you know. But when you're moving around, it becomes a little bit more difficult. But being in somewhere like Cape Town, for example, childcare becomes simpler because the structure there is that, like, there are people who are prepared to live with you and live with a family, much like it is back home in Jamaica, in that old community raising a child African way. So in different places, it's a different thing to negotiate. In London, I realized that, you know, before going to London, I've got to get all the producers to agree that they're going to take care of that, you know? So I'm learning as well. How do I incorporate all that I need as a mother with the with Moon and Phoenix, what do I need in each country? And it's definitely like stepping stones, you know. But what I can say is that whatever you put your head to is definitely doable. Mm-hmm. And so it's a question of what do you want to achieve and naming that thing. And then as you go along the way and you see the challenges, seeing how you can do it better the next time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. It tells us a lot about something that we've lost. Either those of us who have recently migrated to the Americas, the North America, or maybe have lived in a system where the extended family and the extended community has been broken down long, long time ago. You know, I was in the Philippines over the summer and I saw the same thing. You know, there were people coming up from North America with their babies and they were being taken care of by the people around them, right? And vice versa.
We're staying
in a family's house and we're looking after their children as well.
You know? Those systems are still in place in many parts of the world. And of course they're in place here, but I'm not going to lie and say that like having easy access to those systems here, particularly again when you're moving on sort of a different, you know, energetic vibe. Like I'm nomadic and the work that I do encourages me to be nomadic, and I really enjoy being nomadic because Mafia said that in my blood, you know. So that it's a different thing to negotiate not raising the children in one place in sort of a nuclear unit that resembles what. You know, they're being raised in different models. A model more closely resembles the model that I was raised in, which is my mother is a storyteller, raised me as a storyteller, and taught me storytelling along the way, along the road as she traveled, you know, as we traveled. So, and now I am doing the same thing in terms of how I'm sharing storytelling with Moon and Phoenix, and in terms of like their exposure to what the world actually looks like. The world is a very complex place with many different kinds of people living in many different ways. So for us to feel like, say, you know, or sort of one way of living is the way of living is highly problematic. When they go to different parts of the continent, when they go to different parts of Europe, different parts of the Caribbean, they've got a chance to really look at how different people approach the world depending on their class, their race, their gender, their orientation. Mm-hmm. And they've got a firsthand relationship to this idea of adaptability and knowing that home is inside of them as opposed to home is this physical structure where you own land, own care, own this, own that, own that, and that makes you a complete human being. Rather, what makes you a complete human being is your relationship to yourself and your relationship to the communities that you participate in.
So tell me about the relationship between your music. For one, I'd like to talk about the Sankofa trilogy. I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to see it.
No doubt.
But the relationship between this new album you're dropping, 333, and the plays that you're staging right now, and your experience recently in South Africa and this world tour, like how does it all link up?
It's all a culmination of one beautiful cycle, you know. I moved to Toronto when I was 15 in 1993, right?
Yeah.
And then I left in 1997 and went to Montreal. Sort of did my little soul searching thing, you know. Then move to Europe, move to France, Corsica, London, like, you know, move around and really came back to Toronto in 2001 under the guise of going to Jamaica to study at drama school. Uh-huh. And there I met Audrey Zina Mandela, who has mentored me for a large part of my adult life, you know. And Audrey said, no, man, come work for the current theater company, man. And so 2001, and now you were 2011, that's like 10 years. So really, my career is 10 years
deep,
right? And I have to give a big shout out to Toronto because I am a product of Toronto. I'm a product of Fresh Arts.
Definitely.
I'm a product of Be Current. I'm a product of Nightwood Theater. I'm a product of Soul Pepper Theater. I'm a product of Theater Passamurai. I'm a product. I've come out of the artistic community of Toronto. Mm-hmm. Many people have had a hand in how I've been raised. You know what I'm saying? Lily and Allen, my mother first and foremost, Anita Stewart, the pioneer dub poet. You know, so I am what happens when a village raises a child. Like, that is what I am, you see me?
Mm-hmm.
And all the work that I've been doing for the last 10 years culminates in this trilogy. So I started the trilogy early on in 2002.
All right.
2002 in Cuba. And now it's three plays that look at three generations of women in Jamaica that's very much based on my life, my mother's life, my grandmother's life.
Yeah.
But also the album, you know, for those who know my work since around 2000, 2001, they know that, like, the album has, like, 16 tracks, and maybe three tracks of those tracks come from early 2000, you know, like, four or five come from mid-2000, and, like, seven or eight come from now, so that the album is also a culmination of my own growth as a poet, as a dub poet in Toronto. So what I'm looking at is the end of a cycle for me, the end of an artistic cycle, the end of a creative cycle, and the beginning of something else, you know?
That's beautiful.
And it
That's
just
life.
So happens that the end of that cycle coincides with my work going international now and moving beyond the boundaries, and boundaries not meaning like confined or oppressive, but just the boundaries, the physical boundaries.
The physical, natural boundaries.
Yeah, natural boundaries of Jamaica and Canada,
and
moving into Africa and Europe and the rest of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And that's a real celebration for me because I'm 33 now, you know, like, big woman now. You know what I'm saying? So it really feels amazing to be able to celebrate with Toronto and say, Toronto, this album, this trilogy is for you because it's from you that it comes.
So tell us where we can see this trilogy and before we set you off again to the...
Yeah, man, the trilogy is happening at Tarragon Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
And Tarragon Theatre is at 30 Bridgeman Avenue. But if you're too tired for write down and remember all of that, then you can just go to thebeyoung.com. That's thebeyoung.com.
Yeah.
All the information is on there around the album and the trilogy. We're running the trilogy from now until December 11th. That's three plays.
Yes.
A Word Sound Power, Benu, and Blood. And then we're launching the album on December 5th at Lula Lounge. And then we have a little north and a mini tour. But like I said, if you're too tired to remember all of that, just go to www.dbiyoung.com. And everything that you could ever need is on there, including the tour schedule, the play schedule, and the launch.
And we were going to come down and review the play for Basics for the next issue, so you'll be in our paper too.
Mr. Please come review the play.
We can't wait
to see anything more to play.
We'll be there. for real. So look, before we go out, tell us what this next track is all about. Rivers of Love.
Rivers of Love, yeah, man, because, you know, ultimately you can't have no dialogue about revolution without having a dialogue of love.
Beautiful.
So this is my attempt at being as honest as I can be about my own negotiations with love and fear and finding my courage.
Rivers of Love, Debbie Young, thanks for being on the show, sister.
Bless up. Love in a long time, Toronto.
Much love. All power to you on the way, all power to the people.
What good, my friend.
At Radio Basis, we're going out with this track. This is Rivers of Love, Debbie Young. Say goodnight, sister.
Yeah, man.
All right. Much love. Much love.
Bless.
Who amongst us carries the sage secrets of loving? Where are our elders, our children, the ones who walk with the old-time knowledge of a healing love? An unapologetic love, an uncompromising love, an honest love. If you tell me who, I will sit studently by the rivers of their feet, washing away all this unknowing that I have come to know, relearning a language of honesty and integrity and compassion. These languages were carved on our hearts, sung by ancient ones who somehow we have forgotten. Because somewhere between a dream and a timelessness, across the ocean waters, our sons and daughters, our mothers and fathers, our auntie, uncle, sister and brother, stretch love fabric thick and thin. So now here we are, chatting, trying to heal these scars of broken fiber that stick up inside the wind like maca. Who amongst us carries the same secrets of loving? Where are our elders? Where are our children? The ones who walk with the one-time knowledge of a because these languages were carved on my heart's tongue by ancient ones who somewhere, somehow